So this morning we're going to talk about probably the most familiar parable Jesus told, one of at least two that could fit into that category. But I kind of want to review some things before we get to that. In chapter 5, Jesus heals a paralyzed man, and the Pharisees get upset with him. And then they get upset with him and his disciples for not fasting. In chapter 6, Luke records that there are issues about the Sabbath that are brought up again. And the Pharisees are upset with him. And he heals a man on the Sabbath. And at the end of that, it actually says the Pharisees and the religious right people were wild with rage. And then chapter 7, there are other issues regarding John the Baptist that have to do with who Jesus is, and the Pharisees are upset with him about that. And then he's anointed by a sinful woman, a prostitute probably, some kind of immoral woman, and the Pharisees are upset with him about that. In chapter 8, a similar thing happens. In chapter 9, Jesus predicts his death, and it's at the hands of the Pharisees and the chief priests, as well as the Roman rulers. In chapter 10, we have the parable of the Good Samaritan, which gets everybody's teeth set on edge, because the Good Samaritan is about the enemy being the good guy. In chapter 11, he has a series of woes to the Pharisees because of their hypocrisy and what they do and what they say as relates to the rest of the people. In chapter 13, he heals on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees are upset with him about that. In chapter 14, he heals on the Sabbath, and the Pharisees are upset about that. I mean, Jesus can't win. They get upset with him about everything. So in chapter 15, it starts off this way. Now the tax collectors and sinners were all gathering around to hear him, but the Pharisees and the scribes, the teachers of the law, muttered. I always love it when the Bible talks about muttering. Mutter, 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 mutter. Because there are times when I mutter. Mutter, 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 mutter. And it's never good. So the Pharisees are muttering. And this is what they're muttering about. This man welcomes sinners and eats with them. A couple weeks ago I said, if you read the gospel according to Luke, Jesus is eating his way through Galilee and Judea. And most of these things either happen in the synagogue or around a table someplace. And in every single one of those things, there's an opportunity for people to take a step toward him in faith or reject him and take a step away. So Jesus is aware of what's going on in this little crowd of people that includes the Pharisees, and they're mutter, 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 mutter. And so what he does is he tells three parables, as Bruce said. One about lost sheep, one about the lost coin. Have you ever lost something in your house the way Bruce was talking about it? I went to the Safeway the other day. Nancy was halfway around the world in Sri Lanka, and I had gotten a prescription. And I have one of these little pill boxes. You know, when you get old, you get pill boxes, and put it in each of them. Some of you have not gotten there yet. Yes, okay. Just wait. So I'm filling these things, and I look for the bottle of that one prescription, and I can't find it. I mean, I literally had it 15 seconds before, and I cannot find it. I tore the house apart looking for that for a week. Finally, I gave up and called the pharmacy and said, look, I lost the prescription. Can you get me another one? And they said, well, we'll see about that. And they got me a new one. And then he tells the parable of the lost son, which we call the parable of the prodigal son. Parables function in a particular way. They tease out truth. They're not opaque, but they're not always obvious. And in particular, the meaning and application is not always obvious. Many times they are, but often we just don't like the message. Or we do, as one of the elders said on Monday night, when I hear about stuff like this and what I preached on last Sunday, the next place I go is, but what about? If life is really like that, but what about this? Well, I think that but goes along with mutter. And in my sanctified imagination, at the end of this third parable, all of those Pharisees are not only ticked off, they don't like the message, and they're asking the question, but. Prodigal. What does the word prodigal mean? Do you know? It literally means extravagantly wasteful. And so we call it the parable of the prodigal son, because the prodigal son goes off into a far country and wastes all of that which has been given to him in an extravagant and wasteful and degenerate living. And so we call it the parable of the prodigal son. But more and more people are coming to understand this is not really a parable about the prodigal son. It's really a parable about the prodigal father. Because this parable, though it focuses on one son and then the second son, it's really a parable about God. What did Jesus come to do? He came to do primarily two things. He came to reveal the truth about who God is and what God is like. About what the kingdom of God is like. What it means to live in God's kingdom. So in the Gospel of John, he says, if you want to know what the Father is like, you need to look at me. I don't say anything except the things that the Father tells me to say, and I don't do anything except that which the Father tells me to do. So if you want to know what God is like, look at me. That is the testimony of Christianity for the last 2,000 years. If you want to know what God is like, look at Jesus. So when Jesus tells this parable, though he's talking about a son who wastes his life, he's really talking about a father who allows that to take place. And then what the Father does. The second thing that Jesus came to do was to bring about redemption. To take a world that has gone astray. A world, a whole world that has gone off into the far country. A whole world that has lost its life through extravagant, wasteful living. In order to bring that whole world back to God. That's what Jesus came to do, to reveal the truth about who God is and what he's like, and to be the agent of redemption and reconciliation, to accomplish what God really wants to have happen. Which is, as Bruce said, to bring back the treasure, his peculiar people. Not just the people of Israel, Gentiles and Jews, all alike. And not just the older son, but the younger son as well. So I'm going to read through this because you're so familiar with it. I'm going to make a couple of comments along the way and then an application. Jesus continued, there was a man who had two sons. The younger one said to his father, Father, give me my share of the estate. And so he divided the property between them. Okay, this is the first sticking point in the parable for the people who are listening to it. Number one, for the son to say, give me my share of the estate, is essentially saying to the father, I wish you were dead. In other words, I don't want to wait until you die to get my share of the estate. I want my share of the estate now. I wish you were dead. Now, fathers, how would you feel if your son said that to you? I wish you were dead. What kind of things would go on inside of you? I mean, my four boys have said much, much less to me, and I've gotten all tied up in knots about it. But this father, this is the second sticking point, this father says, okay. Now, in that day and age in particular, a father doing that is unheard of. A father who had a son come to him and say, I wish you were dead, would say, fine, you're dead to me, go. There's a very poignant point in Fiddler on the Roof at the very end of the movie where the father, who has been stretched to the limits and giving grace to his girls, finally says to the last one, you're dead to me, because she's gone too far. Now, what I love about that play is there's a little glimmer of hope that happens at the end of that, but that's where he is. So as people are listening to the story, they're entering into the story and they're saying, wait a minute, that's not good. And then secondly, that's not good. And then verse 13, not long after that, the younger son got together all he had and he set off for a far country and there squandered his wealth in wild living. He was prodigal, extravagantly wasteful. And the wild living word there has to do with sexual promiscuity. I mean, he's really gone off the deep end. And he squanders everything. And if you're listening to this for the first time and you hear it, you're going, good, he deserves that. He's getting his comeuppance. He deserves it. And after he had spent everything, there was a severe famine in the whole country and he began to be in need. And so he went and hired himself out as a citizen of that country who sent him to his fields to feed pigs. Good Jewish boy who observes kosher is now feeding pigs. He longed to fill his stomach with the pods that the pigs were eating, but no one gave him anything. So now the listeners are saying, yes, this is even better. He really should be dead. Then verse 17, there's a turn. Then he came to his senses. Literally, he came to himself. And he said, how many of my father's hired men have food to spare? And here I am starving to death. I will set out and go back to my father and say to him, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. And that, by the way, that phrase for me lets me know that he really has come to his senses. Because he recognizes that the sin is not just about sin against the Father, but it's a sin against God as well. In other words, he has missed the mark by a wide margin. He has crossed over the line. He has strayed from the path. Remember, we talked about that a few weeks ago. That's what sin is. It's either falling short, missing the mark, it's straying from the path, or it's crossing over a line. And that's where he's come to. He's come to realize his problem. He is in the midst of that little process we've been talking about for the last few years of orientation, disorientation, new orientation. So he's had one orientation. I don't need my father. I don't need anybody. I just want what I should have, what's deserved to me, which is my share of the estate. That's been his orientation. Then he goes and he lives his life riotously, and he finds himself in need. And in that midst of that disorientation, he comes to his senses. And so he turns. He literally turns. He has a change of mind, he has a change of heart, and he has a change of direction with his life, and he goes back to the Father. And in the process, he has a speech that he's prepared. I don't deserve to be your son. I've disobeyed you. I've sinned against you. I've sinned against heaven. Just take me back as one of your hired servants. So he got up and went to his father. And this is where we get a second insight into the prodigal God. While he was still a long way off, his father saw him and was filled with compassion for him. He ran to his son, threw his arms around him, and kissed him. Literally, he fell on his neck and kissed him, and kissed him, and kissed him, and kissed him. And while he was a long way off, he saw him. In other words, you get the picture that the father, though having lost the son, having gone off into the far country, he stands at the edges of his fields and of his house with his eyes ever on the horizon, looking for his son to come back. Two insights into God. Number one, he's never going to force his way with us. He's always going to let us go our own way. Even if he hates the way we're going, he gives us the freedom of choice. Every encounter with Jesus in the Gospels is an opportunity to make a choice, to take a step toward him or to take a step away from him. And so the same thing is going on here. The son has come to his senses, and so though he's taken big steps away from the father, now he's turned to go back to the father. And the father is on the lookout for him and doesn't wait for him to arrive. He actually goes running toward him. Which is another thing that if the hearers are listening in this story, is like, what? Fathers don't run. That's beneath them. That's not dignified. And yet here the father is running. To reach him before anything else can happen. And the son says to him, while this is going on, Father, I've sinned against heaven and against you. I'm no longer worthy to be called your son. But the father cuts him off mid-sentence. Says to his servants, quick, bring the best robe and put it on him. Put a ring on his finger and sandals on his feet. Bring the fattened calf and kill it. Let's have a feast and celebrate. For this son of mine was dead and is alive. He was lost and is found. And so they began to celebrate. There shouldn't be any party going on here. This guy's the scum of the earth. He's wanted his father's dead. His father dead. He's wanted what he gets from his father and used it, squandered it, wasted it. He's betrayed everything there is to betray about being a Jew and about being a good son. And yet here is this father running to him, embracing him, weeping and kissing with joy over his son coming home and saying, let's throw a party. And so they go about doing that. Meanwhile, the older son was in the field. And when he came near the house, he heard music and dancing. Interestingly enough, nobody thought to go tell the older son that the other one was back. He didn't find out until he comes home and there's a party going on. And so he called one of his servants and asked him, what was going on? And your brother has come, he said. And your father has killed the fattened calf because he has him back safe and sound. And the older brother became angry, filled with rage, just like the Pharisees. Every time Jesus showed compassion and healed, included, embraced, they got angry and were filled with rage. And here the older brother does exactly the same thing. I don't think it's too far-fetched to say that Jesus is saying to the Pharisees, you're like the older brother. So the older brother became angry and refused to go in, took a step away, a step back. So his father went in and pleaded with him. Went out and pleaded with him. So now the father has gone out twice. Once to go get the younger brother who's come back, and now to get the older brother who won't come in. And he goes out. That tells us something about what God is like. All these years, Father, look, I've been slaving for you and never disobeyed your orders. I'm the good son. I've never disobeyed you. And I have worked like a slave for you. You never gave me even a young goat, let alone a fattened calf, that I could celebrate with my friends. And yet, this son of yours, he can't even bring himself to say, my brother, but this son of yours has squandered your property with prostitutes, comes home, and you kill the fattened calf for him. My son, the father said, you are always with me, and everything I have is yours. But we had to celebrate and be glad because this brother of yours was dead and is alive again and was lost and is found. Part of what Jesus is saying is resurrection is happening right here in front of us. And you don't see it. You don't have the eyes to see because all you can see are the faults and failures of your brother. And in the meantime, you have not seen the lavish love that I have for you. My love is unquenchable. What's going on with that older brother? See, really, this is a story about two lost sons, isn't it? One son that has been lost by going physically to a far country and squandering his life. But the other son who has stayed close, but he has gone into a far country without leaving the home because he's never realized the love of the Father. All he knows are rules and regulations. All he knows is how to obey. So what does he have? He's filled with jealousy. He's filled with lack of forgiveness. He's filled with resentment. He has no understanding of the life of the kingdom of God and what God is really like. He's missed it completely. He doesn't understand relationships. Do you have that picture of the prodigal son? Can you put that up? Henry Nouwen wrote this meditation on the prodigal son. It's a great book. I'd suggest you get it. You can go out to the book table and you can order it through Paul. He'll be more than happy to give it to you at a discount.
Thank you.
You're welcome. I have this painting, a print of this in my office. I sit at my desk and look at it every day. We could talk a lot about the painting, but I just want to read one portion of Nouwen's meditation. The return of the younger son makes him call for a joyful celebration. The return of the elder son makes him extend an invitation to full participation in that joy. In the house of my Father, there are many places to live, Jesus says. Each child of God has there his or her unique place, all of them places of God. I have to let go of all comparison, all rivalry and competition, and surrender to the Father's love. This requires a leap of faith because I have little experience of non-comparing love and do not know the healing power of such love. As long as I stay outside in the darkness, I can only remain in the resentful complaint that results from my comparisons. Outside of the life, my younger brother seems to be more loved by my father than I. In fact, outside of the light, I cannot even see him as my own brother. God is urging me to come home, to enter into his life, and to discover that there in God, all people are uniquely and completely loved. In the light of God, I can finally see my neighbor as my brother and as the one who belongs as much to God as I do. But outside of God's house, brothers and sisters, husbands and wives, lovers and friends become rivals and even enemies, each perpetually plagued by jealousies, suspicions, and resentment. Here I see how lost the elder son is. He has become a foreigner in his own house. True communion is gone. Every relationship is pervaded by the darkness. To be afraid or to show disdain, to suffer submission or to enforce control, to be an oppressor or to be a victim, these have become the choices for the one outside the light. Sins cannot be confessed. Forgiveness cannot be received. The mutuality of love cannot exist. True community has become impossible. The story of the prodigal son is the story of a God who goes searching for me and who doesn't rest until he has found me. Beyond that is a story of a prodigal God who goes searching for all of his lost children, no matter who they are or what they've done. And he invites us to be agents of that invitation, to have communion with the one true living God who loves us relentlessly, who will not give up. His love wins in the end.